Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me for the Friday, June 26th reading of East Valley News, featuring the towns of Scottsdale and Paradise Valley. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Chris Rosewell. The first article today is from the Scottsdale Progress. It's titled, Scottsdale Claims It's Cracking Down on Short-Term Rental Offenders, by Tom Scanlon. As the Progress reported last month, the Scottsdale Police Department made 9 arrests in 2 weeks after 2 shooting incidents at short-term rentals. In a press release last week, the city says it's going after bad actors on the STR scene. The subject line of the city's email, Scottsdale cracks down on nuisance parties and illegal activity at short-term rentals. According to Holly Peralta, a city spokeswoman, Scottsdale issued 56 charges and citations related to short-term rental activity in May, including violations tied to nuisance parties, criminal investigations, and licensing compliance. We will not allow a small number of bad actors to jeopardize the safety and character of our neighborhoods, said City Manager Greg Caton. Residents deserve to feel safe in their homes, and we are committed to using every tool available to address nuisance activity, unlawful events, and criminal behavior associated with short-term rentals. Some who responded to a Progress Facebook post were unconvinced. Oh, please, Christy Fay commented. The city tries so hard to give us the illusion of caring, but until they start shutting down the bachelor and bachelorette parties and actually enforce occupancy ordinances, the neighbors are still left to suffer. Every weekend is a new group of loud, obnoxious expletive. Karen Rambat added, I wonder how much money the city makes off of STRs. The press release underscored the May 6 shooting stemming from a party at a short-term rental in the Maya complex in Old Town. This incident resulted in multiple arrests, as well as a suspect being shot by police. The property owner was cited for operating without a required city license, according to Peralta, while the renter was cited for hosting and promoting a nuisance party and operating an event venue. Officers also responded to multiple large parties involving underage alcohol consumption, she noted, investigated assaults and domestic disturbances, and handled several alcohol-related medical emergencies, including incidents requiring hospitalization. And 2 large promoter-sponsored events advertised through social media were identified and stopped before they could occur after coordination between police and property owners. Our officers are taking a proactive approach because we know the impact these incidents can have on surrounding neighborhoods, said Police Chief Joe LaDuke. When short-term rentals become venues for criminal activity, large disruptive parties, or unsafe behavior, we take law enforcement action. Our goal is simple: protect residents, preserve neighborhood quality of life, and hold violators accountable. Michelle Rary's response to that on Facebook, about time. Peralta noted the increased enforcement activity follows years of work by Scottsdale's multidisciplinary short-term rental working group. Recent efforts have included expanded officer training focused on nuisance party investigations, improved coordination among departments, and accelerated identification of unlicensed operators. The city has also increased its focus on repeat offenders and property owners who fail to comply with licensing requirements. The press release concludes, while Scottsdale continues to support responsible short-term rental operations, city leaders say the message is clear. Properties that become magnets for nuisance activity, illegal events, or criminal behavior can expect swift enforcement and significant consequences. His Facebook comment suggested Dave Fox was not sold on the city's approach to STRs. Cracking down? Yeah, right. And that article was titled, Scottsdale Claims It's Cracking Down on STR Offenders. Scottsdale City Council to Vote on Water Credit Purchase, by Tom Scanlon. Over several executive sessions spanning 3 months, Scottsdale's elected officials have had a secret, not open to the public at least, meetings about the Harquahala Valley water. Now, according to the Tuesday, 23rd of June agenda, City Council will vote on a Harquahala contract. but as this is on the consent agenda, there may not be an explanation of what sounds like a complicated process. The proposed ordinance notes this is part of a plan to develop a diverse and resilient water supply portfolio to respond to unstable water supplies from the Colorado River. According to the agenda report, City Council will vote on a contract for the purchase of 15,000 acre-feet of long-term storage credits to be paid for by a capital budget appropriation transfer of up to $8,250,000 from the Water Fund contingency. According to the contract, the credits are connected to water stored in the Velder Underground Storage Facility located in the Harquahala non-expansion area. The report explains long-term storage credits are water rights designated by the Arizona Department of Water Resources through a permitting process. Credits are given when water cannot reasonably be used directly, the water was not recovered on an annual basis, and the water would not have been naturally recharged within the active management area. Phoenix Active Management Area currently holds approximately 8.1 million acre-feet of long-term storage credits, with Scottsdale owning 277,691 of the credits. Indeed, Scottsdale has been banking water for years. On average, for the last 5 years, we've recharged around 15,000 acre-feet per year, Gretchen Baumgartner, then Scottsdale Water Policies Manager, said in 2023. The city typically consumes 70,000 to 80,000 acre-feet of water per year. Now, city officials are urging City Council to add to Scottsdale's water portfolio by purchasing long-term storage credits from the Velder Water Company, which are within the Harquahala area, which can be transported to Scottsdale. This further allows diversification and augmentation of Scottsdale's water portfolio outside of the Phoenix AMA, the report states. The cost of $8.25 million equates to $550 per acre foot. Long-term storage credits do not expire and can be held by the city indefinitely, according to Thyra Ryden Diaz, the new interim director of Scottsdale Water Resources. The city may also opt to either pump water to redeem these credits in the future, she noted, or if they become necessary, sell the credits. The long-term storage credits offer the city a high degree of flexibility. No transportation costs. With no presentation scheduled, the Progress asked City Manager Greg Caton to explain the complex process. This transaction is about strengthening Scottsdale's long-term water security through diversification of the city's water portfolio, Holly Peralta, a city spokeswoman, responded. She noted the Harquahala credits come from an area which is different from the majority of Scottsdale's existing LTSC holdings located within the Phoenix Active Management Area. As a result, this is not simply adding to the city's existing stored water reserves, it's expanding and diversifying where Scottsdale holds water assets across Arizona. And Peralta noted, through partnerships with two golf properties, Scottsdale holds groundwater rights in the Harquahala Valley, totaling approximately 3,800 acre-feet annually. Big cuts to the Colorado River supply are likely to start later this year. Scottsdale has consistently pursued a strategy of planning ahead, Peralta said, diversifying its water portfolio and maintaining reliable water supplies for residents and businesses. This recommendation reflects that long-term approach. There are no transportation costs associated with this proposed purchase, she noted. The ask is for City Council to acquire storage credits, not the delivery of water. Harquahala Water. According to the Governor's Office, the Harquahala Ground Basin is a massive drought-proof water supply located in western Maricopa and La Paz counties. Designated as an agricultural transportation basin, it holds over 8 million acre-feet of water and is now used by central Arizona cities, such as Buckeye and Queen Creek, to secure long-term drought-resistant water supplies. In 2025, the Arizona Department of Water Resources allowed Harquahala water to be purchased by outside municipalities. While Queen Creek and Buckeye whipped out their checkbooks, the town of Cave Creek, bordering on far north Scottsdale, got cold feet. Cave Creek was slated to spend $11 million for rights to 500 acre-feet of water for 100 years. After approving a tentative deal, Cave Creek Town Council ultimately voted not to proceed with the purchase due to extensive infrastructure costs and unknown costs. And that article was titled, Scottsdale City Council to Vote on Water Credit Purchase. Scottsdale Councilman says Axon is trying to zap his campaign, by Tom Scanlon. Outdoor temperatures soared to 110 last week, with more of the same in store this week. That coincides with increasing heat on the local campaign trail. While Scottsdale weather continues its low humidity, the political scene here is growing muggy. Indeed, a Scottsdale representative running for re-election is claiming a local powerhouse is attacking him. Axon has officially entered the Scottsdale City Council race, Councilman Barry Graham posted last week. Graham alleges Axon wants to destroy my resident-friendly reputation. This led to an off-the-ropes response from the North Scottsdale taser maker. A former Axon spokesman called Graham loose with the truth and hypocritical. Meanwhile, the countdown is on for Scottsdale voting. On Wednesday, June 24th, Maricopa County will mail ballots as early voting begins. July 21st is primary election day. While voting across the state will narrow the pool of Democrats and Republicans in various races, Scottsdale's primary is nonpartisan. Voters here will reduce a field of 8 aiming for 3 city council seats. Last week, The Progress published the second part of candidates' answers to extensive questionnaires posted at scottsdale.org. Candidates also submitted guest columns to The Progress. You can see page 26 of this edition. The candidates in alphabetical order: Crystal Carroll, an Old Town Cafe owner who says she's charged up to fight a parking garage. Councilman Barry Graham, an accountant and leader of the conservative bloc who is running for re-election. Ethan Nolden, a former San Francisco attorney who is president of the D.C. Ranch Community Council. Former Councilman Bob Littlefield, leader of the Political Action Committee challenging Axon's expansion. Eric Sloan, a business owner who has twice failed in runs for the Arizona Corporation Commission. Michelle Ugenti Rita, a former state senator and representative. Councilwoman Solange Whitehead, running for a third term. Raul Zubia, a business consultant who failed in a 2022 run for city council. Graham has been trading shots with Whitehead over Scottsdale's approach to recycled water. Whitehead repeatedly called for city manager Greg Caton to commit funds to Scottsdale's advanced water purification system. Graham scoffs at the system as toilets to taps. Graham shifted his focus with a June 12 social media post. Better Together, an Axon front group, has begun flooding the airwaves with attacks on front runners Bob Littlefield, Michelle Ugenti Rita, and me, the only candidates who stood up to their massive apartment project and continue to oppose their goal to turn Scottsdale into a city that surpasses Seattle, Graham posted. He encouraged Scottsdale residents to be wary of Axon handpicking your city council members. The short response from Axon spokesman David Leibowitz: Axon is not officially or directly involved in the Scottsdale council races. Leibowitz ranted that Graham simply makes stuff up, like the fantasy that he, Michelle Scandal a Minute Ugenti, and Dark Money Bob Littlefield are the front runners. There is not a single credible poll that shows that. Zero. Two political action committees and a counterattack. As The Progress reported last year, Axon Enterprises and Axon founder Chief Executive Officer Rick Smith each contributed $500,000 to Arizonans for a Better Future. Josh Eisner, the Axon president, who has publicly battled Graham, chipped in $100,000 to the political action committee. The Axon Smith-funded Political Action Committee put some of that money to use in TV ads attacking Graham in 2025. Arizonans for a Better Future spent $582,000, with $170,000 to Signal Reach, $165,000 to Trailhead Strategic Communications, and $16,000 to Leibowitz through the first quarter of this year, according to Transparency USA. Now, according to its website that mirrors Arizonans for a Better Future, Better Together is a political action committee committed to keeping our communities moving forward with practical, politically wise solutions that rise above partisanship. Better Together's Facebook site claims it is cutting through the clutter of politics to enhance the economy, public safety, and individual freedom, a voice for common sense in a world of screaming. Better Together filed with the state June 5th. Chris Baker is its chairman. Leibowitz, who has as recently as May 14th responded to a progress question as its spokesman, is listed as Better Together's treasurer. Baker and Leibowitz have similar positions with the Arizonans for a Better Future. As they are on recycled water, Graham and Whitehead are sharply divided on Axon's international campus, anchored by a new corporate office but also featuring apartment buildings and a hotel. Whitehead supported the original 2024 Axon rezoning for 1,900 units, as well as a memorandum of understanding with the city earlier this year, which reduced the apartments to 1,200. Graham voted against both. Additionally, Graham and Eugenti Rita spoke against the Axon plan at the state capitol, but state legislatures ignored their protests, passing a bill that allowed Axon's development, essentially nullifying a planned referendum. Led by Bob Littlefield, Taxpayers Against Awful Apartment Zoning Exemptions filed lawsuits challenging the state law and the city Axon deal. Graham strongly suggested Axon wants far more than what the current deal with the city allows. Here's the reality. If Axon's executives can defeat those of us standing in their way, they can simply file another application and push it right back up to 2,500 units or more, Graham alleged. Is that why their front groups are blanketing Scottsdale with lies about me? Jenny Harris posted a question to Graham. Who is funding your anti-Axon group, please? She was referring to the longtime stance by Littlefield, who has refused to name the financial backer behind Taze's referendum signature effort in court battles. I have nothing to do with Taze, Graham said. In May, Taze reported income of $50,374, with 95% coming from the Mesa-based dark money conduit Public Integrity Alliance, and expenses of $49,640, most in operating expenses. Leibowitz chimed in, alluding to Graham's June 9th approval vote of a One Scottsdale request for 350 additional housing units. It's no shock Barry Graham would lash out in a hypocritical way. It's how he covers his tracks. No party voters. Can only Democrats and Republican voters participate in the Scottsdale primary? In Scottsdale, voters registered as independent or no party preference can vote in the primary election, Holly Peralta, a city spokeswoman, said. However, they must choose which ballot they want to receive. They may request a Democrat, Republican, or no labels party ballot, but can only vote in one of the party's primaries. All of the party ballots will include the Scottsdale City Council contest as well. Additionally, voters can request a nonpartisan ballot, which will only include the Scottsdale City Council contest. Independents, no labels, who want to participate by mail must request the ballot they want, according to Peralta. This can be done at the beballotready.vote or by calling 602-506-1511. If voting in person, Peralta added, they can select their preferred ballot at the voting location. Voters should be sure to bring proper ID to the polls. Open house. The Scottsdale Chamber of Commerce is hosting a June 22nd meet and greet with the council candidates. According to the Chamber, this will be a chance for the public to meet and ask questions of the candidates, allowing them to articulate their visions and policies in an open public environment. Each candidate will discuss plans for addressing the city's most pressing issues, ensuring all voices are heard, and allowing the electorate to make sound and informed decisions at the ballot box. The open house starts at 5 p.m. Monday, June 22nd, at the Homestead Community Center at DC Ranch, 18600 North 98th Street. Attendance is free. Registration is required. To register, visit scottsdalechamber.com. Early voting. Beginning Wednesday, June 24th, 2026, only certain voting locations will be open. All voting locations will be open on Election Day, Tuesday, July 21st, from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. You can drop off your voted mail ballot at the following locations starting Wednesday, June 24th through Monday, July 20th. Scottsdale City Hall, 3939 North Drinkwater Boulevard. Hours Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Maricopa County Tabulation and Election Center at 510 South 3rd Avenue. The Phoenix hours are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or the Maricopa County Recorder Elections Office at 222 East Javelina Avenue in Mesa, also open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, starting Wednesday, June 24th. And that article was titled, Scottsdale Councilman Says Axon is Trying to Zap His Campaign. And now for some Paradise Valley news from the town of Paradise Valley Independent. A growing racket over pickleball in Paradise Valley. Residents ask council to pause court permits and increase public input as noise complaints persist. By Allison Coatsbauer. A longtime Paradise Valley resident called for greater transparency when new pickleball courts are approved in town. Terry Green Sterling, a journalist who has lived in Paradise Valley since 1972, raised the issue during the town council's June 11th meeting, arguing that residents deserve more opportunities to learn about and comment on proposed courts before the permits are issued. Homeowners often receive little notice or say before projects are approved, despite long-standing community concerns about noise, she said. We all know that pickleball noise is a nuisance and a national problem, she said, noting some wealthy municipalities have banned pickleball courts altogether, while others have changed zoning setbacks, and still others have revamped noise ordinances to comport with 21st century technology. Rising noise levels from pickleball in Paradise Valley neighborhoods are undermining the qualities that attracted residents to this community, Green Sterling continued. The future of Paradise Valley as a peaceful desert refuge is at stake. Our neighborhood knows that firsthand. She said 4 years ago, the town permitted pickleball courts to be built on the property next to hers, and since then the noise hasn't stopped. The noise is nerve-shattering. It feels like an ongoing assault, she said. Those of us living close to the courts can't be outside when pickleball is played for hours on end. I've lost the right to peaceful enjoyment of our property. The residents near the court not only lost their peaceful property, but possibly money, Green Sterling claimed. One real estate expert suggests property resale values may decline 10 to 20% if pickleball courts are constructed close to the property for sale, she added. According to Councilmember Karen Leitman, pickleball is a health concern that can cause real stress. Studies have shown that exposure to pickleball noise negatively affects nearby neighborhoods, she says. In an email statement, the intermittent, high-pitched sound of hard plastic balls striking hard pickleball paddles can trigger a stress response, increase heart rates, and trigger acute anxiety. None of the problems her neighborhood faces are of their own making, and she does not wish for other Paradise Valley residents to have the same issues arise, Green Sterling said. We neighbors have a long and well-documented history of varying concerns about pickleball in the town, she said. I don't want future Paradise Valley residents to endure what we endured and are still enduring in our neighborhood. The comments come from the zoning discussions at the May 14th council meeting, where the council directed staff to come back with updates to city codes regarding pickleball courts. Councilmember Ellen Ander Killer stated in an email, "This has been an ongoing issue that we are addressing," she noted. Mayor Mark Stanton said the council plans to address the issues at a future meeting sometime in the fall, although the official date has not been set. "I'm so very, very grateful to you all for considering regulating pickleball via the town zoning and sound ordinances," Green Sterling said. Green Sterling closed her public comment asking the council to address two things in the future. Please pause pickleball permits until you have decided how to move forward and how to regulate pickleball, she said. Please notify and seek the input of residents living near proposed pickleball courts before permits are issued. Councilman Lippman said she welcomes the council's comprehensive discussion of pickleball-related issues in Paradise Valley. This would include educating residents about quieter equipment, limiting the hours when pickleball may be played on an outside court, and encouraging the installation of acoustic barriers, she said. I would also encourage the town to be more diligent in enforcing existing permit requirements and nuisance regulations. And that article was titled, A Growing Racket Over Pickleball in Paradise Valley. Now for an opinion piece titled, Vote for the Person and Their Qualifications, Not Their Party, by Joy McLean. As Paradise Valley residents prepare to vote for town council, I would offer the perspective of a former councilman and longtime resident of the town. Party affiliation has never mattered in Paradise Valley Town Council elections. The issues facing the council are not partisan in nature. Our local legislative district committees have issued golden tickets recommending candidates. Even though my preferred candidate is on the golden ticket, I wish they would refrain from endorsing candidates in Paradise Valley's nonpartisan town council elections. When I served on the town council, party affiliation was irrelevant. We were committed to preserving the town's character, limiting government growth, and reducing governmental interference in the lives of our residents. All four candidates running for three town council seats belong to the same political party, but that does not matter. What matters is their commitment to preserving the unique character of Paradise Valley. Incumbent Anna Thomason has a proven track record of putting residents first. I hope you include Anna Thomason in your choices when you vote. And that was an opinion piece titled, Vote for the Person and Their Qualifications, Not Their Party. You've been listening to the East Valley News featuring the towns of Scottsdale and Paradise Valley. All your favorite programming can be heard anytime on demand at sunsounds.org. I'm your volunteer reader, Chris Rosewell. I hope you have a great rest of your day.